You know, I wrote my first book on mimetic desire, mimetic rivalry, which is, I'm a literary critic, fundamentally. I was trained as a historian, but I started to teach literature in this country and I didn't know what to do. And I looked for what made the great novels similar to each other, rather than different. You know, according to literary criticism, 40 years ago, the important thing was originality in the sense that I don't like. Trying to show that each book says something entirely different from all the others, says it in a different way. You know, the aesthetic viewpoint that I cannot stand. And instead of doing that, which you had to do then, which you still have to do today, but you look for different things. I was interested in the psychology, what people would call the psychology of these novels, and I felt that it was the same always, that it had what I call that mimetic rivalry, that there were always people, lovers, for instance, choosing the same lover, not because of the object, but because jealousy came before love, in a way, or envy. That's what I call mimetic desire. You imitate your model, but if you both imitate each other, you will desire the same object. Philosophy has not seen that. Philosophy, especially with Plato, has talked magnificently about imitation, but has excluded imitation from and desire, has separated the two. You see, and I think that the great tragedies, the great novels, the great literature, always put the two together. If my last book was on Shakespeare, because I think Shakespeare is the greatest, that the greatness of Shakespeare is due or can be defined at least up to a point, because you cannot define the greatness of Shakespeare, of course. The fact that he sees this, you know, friendship and hatred are one and the same in Shakespeare. The two friends who, in a flash, becomes the worst of enemies, because suddenly, as always, they desire the same thing. And most of the time, to be two friends is to desire the same thing. The same books, the same pieces of music, to love the same thing. But suddenly you love the same woman, and it doesn't work the same way. You know, and no one warns children that this is going to happen, because we live in an Enlightenment world, well, we are supposed not to see these things, to deny that they exist, to say that man is good, and that man won't get in trouble unless the bad capitalist or the bad communist make them bad. No. If men desire the same thing because they imitate each other, there is a principle of conflict in human affairs that we cannot dispose with scapegoating. We cannot say it's some bad people who are responsible for that. We all do it. And if you speak of that to adolescents today, who have never been as unprotected as today, because today the voices of cultures tell them constantly the opposite of the truth. Be yourself, be all, be do what you want, satisfy all your desires, you'll never get into trouble. The next minute, their best friend becomes their worst enemy. This is totally Shakespearean. So they understand. But the generations that believe in the Enlightenment are protected generations, where the rules were still working enough to protect people from this kind of conflict. So they could afford to be against the rules. You see what I mean? They could afford to be even sacrifice. How could we be? How can we afford to be against sacrifice? What does sacrifice mean? It means if you have a choice between a great deal of violence and very little, you choose the very little. That's a sacrificial violence. So if we think, if you think that I said we can do away with sacrifice, you know, immediately, I don't say that at all. I say only Christ did away with sacrifice. But in order to do away with sacrifice, you have to say, well, I don't want a bigger violence, but I don't want the smallest one either. Therefore, I prefer to die myself. And if you are able to do that, I congratulate you. But I know that I'm not able to do it. You see what I mean? Therefore, I do not say that I've done away with the sacrificial world. You see, I really think that Jesus gave the recipe for doing away. You know, says, if there is an excessive demand on you, that's what I think the rules. If there is an excessive demand of you, if people slap you, instead of escalating the mimetic rivalry, give up everything and you do away with it. I don't think the rules of the kingdom of God are a form of socialism, you know, or a form of utopia. They are, if they want you to walk a mile with them, walk two. If they want half of your coat, give them. In other words, discourage this sort of inflation of conflict that takes over, you know, when people want the same thing. If they make excessive demands on you, it's that they already are in mimetic rivalry. If you answer the same way, you only escalate. Therefore, in the end, everybody loses. But in order to do that to the end, would be very easy if everybody did it, because nobody would slap anybody in the face. But if no one does it, it means you'll have to die. The good news becomes bad news for the one who says, hey guys, this is what I propose to you. We all give up this rivalry. But it's not a 50-50 proposition, because the 50-50 proposition is what men have always had. And men always feel that it's been violated by the other fellow. Therefore, I take it quite seriously. And whatever you do, I will go on respecting it. You can be sure you'll end up sacrificed that way. I think this is the logic behind the passion. I simplify it, I schematize it. You see, I prefer to die than to take part in that rat race. Therefore, I reveal it as it really is, which we never mention, you know. So, capital punishment. Capital punishment, of course, is a perfect bone of contention, you know. We are very generous, we are against it, and so forth. I'm against it. And I think we live in a world where it proves how dysfunctional it is. But in order to be really against it, you have to say, I'm ready to die, instead of the victim. Father Kolbe in the concentration camp, who took the place of a victim. To be very self-righteously against capital punishment in a world where there's an enormous amount of crime and so forth, is very easy and very simple. We can be, and I'm against capital punishment, but I cannot indict the people who are for. That's what I mean. You can be against without turning it into a bone of contention and say, oh, these bad people. You see what I mean? Because it's another form of scapegoating.